Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, May 8th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is a pretty pleasant 44 degrees and sunny, bright, and very springy here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Chimeras, Growing Organs, Venter's Genomics, Mad Science, and Neuralink. And apparently, there was one individual out there out of the full 39 that listened to the show that didn't seem to like my show. But I'll tell you, Venter and George Church and DARPA and the universities and the hospitals and the military that are all working together to create these technologies that are very anti-nature, mixing humans with animal DNA, supposed to be in the name of saving humanity, is to produce organs that'll be good for you, Jenny, and they won't reject. You won't get pig infections. But I'm telling you, by doing things like this, we are opening Pandora's box to horrors that we haven't even imagined in our wildest nightmares. And if you start thinking back, I've talked about this before, if you go back into like Greek mythologies and things of that nature, with all the different gods, quote unquote gods with superpowers, and these aberrations, mixtures between man and beast, like the Minotaur. You thought that was myth or fantasy, but I hate to tell you, we are about leading to that time where that is going to be in our reality. And just imagine some, I'm not even going to say the Chinese government might be doing this. No, let's just say it was a rogue Chinese scientist working down a deep, dark hallway. Or, hey, even better yet, what about a rogue US scientist working down a deep, dark hallway who got his nose out of joint because he couldn't get any federal funding? I think we just read a story like that just last week. I don't remember what this lunatic was making, but because he couldn't get federal funding, he had someone like Georgie Porgy Church that was advising him, and he got private funding to start growing scary things in petri dishes. And though there are laws in certain countries, like here in the UK, that say, you grow a human animal chimera, you gotta put it out of its misery within 116 days or something. I don't remember what the day was, the day count, but it was definitely not right now allowing them to grow them to full term. Who knows in other countries what they're allowing, and not only other countries, but think about this. Other countries who might publicly say, oh, yes, we are on board with the international regulations, wink, put down a deep, dark hallway all in the name of creating a DARPA-esque facility. And remember, China and Russia were creating their version of DARPA. They could be creating mixtures of human, animal, and technology, like laser eyeballs or big flappy wings made out of graphene. I don't know. They grow to use in the war machine. Think about that one. I think about this stuff sometimes in my quiet time, and I don't get very much quiet time, like never. But in those wee wee hours, the few fleeting moments where there's nobody needing my attention, I think about these things. And I've thought a lot about the Chinese clone factory. We talked about clones last week as well. How in 2008, at the very end of the reign of George Bush, remember all his buddies, the cattle farmers, and there was no mad cow disease. Nope. Just make sure you down them before they fall down, and you don't have to tell anybody. But with the cloning, 2008 also, the FDA approved cloning for consumption. And that's the scary part, because that's something that in the UK, they absolutely, at least the last time I looked, and please, one of our UK listeners out there, correct me if I'm wrong, but I am pretty certain that it was a big to-do when some cloned meat that was for quote-unquote research purposes only got into the food supply as some kind of cruel joke against a woman. And they were pretty upset about it because that was not meant for anyone to eat. But here in the United States, 2008, the FDA passed a law that allowed food producers to not only clone meat, number one, but number two, don't require any labeling. And number three, determined that it was some sort of biological equivalent. And I know, and I said this the other day, but this just floors me. They said, we know that it's expensive to clone meat back in 2008, which is not anymore. But someday, when the costs come down and you guys decide that it is your best interest to start cloning animals, well, you guys can clone them and put the meat into the food supply and not have to tell anybody. And that's where they left it. So, I don't know, there was a story. I don't even remember when it was. Let's see. 2012. Anthony Gucciardi. Before Anthony Gucciardi's days, which I don't even think he's with Jones anymore, but Anthony Gucciardi was always kind of on his own, and then he had a website, and I think he was even with Mimi, the natural news guy, and he bailed on him too. But I always liked Gucciardi. Gucciardi did a story back in 2012. So not only is the FDA approved clone meat, even though nobody was doing it back then, even though they didn't have any inkling to put it into the food supply when it became non-cost prohibitive, you would be able to put it into the market. And so when I asked the USDA, hey, how much cloned meat's on the market? Guess what? They don't know if you are eating cloned meat. So we see that the Chinese built themselves a cloning factory where they can make up to 1 million cows a year. And the guy who built it said, hey, we can even tool it for humans. And so, you know, these things all bounce around in my little empty brain. They echo. There was an echo. And they all kind of combine together and start playing out this really horrifying scenario in my mind of our potential not too distant future. So let's add clones, let's add humans, let's add chimeras. And then let's add some of this mad science come in. I mean, we're experimenting with all of it, so why not? We know how to zippity zap the brain. Bzz, bzz. Do all kinds of cool things. We can enhance it. We can cure mental disease. Let's splice and dice. I don't know. A few superhuman traits. I just saw something the other day. There's a company called Odin. O-D-I-N, as in the Vikings. Odin. And this is the company that had that DIY genetic modification kit so you could splice and dice genomes in mommy's back bedroom. Well, they were advertising on Facebook about the future of humanity. And they had some adult hand holding a child hand. And I think I might even mention this on Friday. And between the knuckles were all the Wolverine blades sticking out from between the knuckles. Remember, guys, much of this technology is funded by the military industrial complex. So it isn't about saving you or Nana or Susie. It is about finding ways to kill things better. Oh, no. Hold on. Hold on. I'm being thwarted. I'm being thwarted. End task now. I don't know. There's an updater on this computer that seems random. because I don't see anywhere where I can set any times, but every once in a while during this show, that thing fires up, and sometimes it waits until before I start the show. So then it just brings everything to a screeching halt, but I just killed it. So anyway, yeah, this is all funded by the military-industrial complex. And the military-industrial complex does nothing more than find out how to kill things better using science and technology. So we should be very excited that they are working on all these things. So like I said, then let's spin this out. We have Russia and China. We've pissed off appropriately, as always. And they're like, no, we're not working on any of this stuff, wink. But I'll tell you what, China's way, way, way ahead of the game with any of these technologies, CRISPR especially. And even genetically modifying human embryos, something that here in the UK, we were lagging quite a bit behind. So it's got to make you wonder. I saw some of those Chinese troops standing over on the North Korean border in a news story last week or the week before. And I thought to myself, wow, those boys look pretty young. You know, they look probably about 18, 19. They were all really scrawny little guys. And I started thinking to myself, when did they start tinkering with this technology? You know, because how long would it take? A simple generation, unless, of course, they can find a way to accelerate growth. Oh, I didn't give them any ideas. But at least right now, as far as I know, it's still going to take a normal human lifespan for one of these, what did they call them in that sci-fi movie with Harrison Ford? Oh, replicants. How long is it going to take for a replicant to grow to full term in the future? Because, I mean, I can guarantee you some smarty-pants scientist, you know, they might already be working on how to stop aging. But if you learn how to stop aging, it's not too much of a stretch of the imagination to figure out how to accelerate aging. And, hey, maybe that could always be a kill switch in these things. Let them get old really fast so we don't have to worry about them overpopulating and taking over. But, you know, I wouldn't put it past any of these lunatics that they would be developing some sort of super human crossed animal soldier. Minotaurs would be perfect. Combination between some sort of, like, bull and human. And like I've joked many times before, but it's really not a joke, add some sort of laser vision or abilities to see in infrared or ultraviolet. You have a couple pokey wings that on demand that come out. And then put a little brain control interface. We're going to talk about that. Elon Musk, Neuralink, we read a story on Friday about that. He is marching straight ahead. We want to join the machine because there's no way we're going to be able to beat it. Let's put a little, some sort of neural interface in there, and you could control these human-created minotaurs with a joystick. Or, hey, how about with AI on the back end to fight all your wars? They will literally be animals. So, what on earth is that going to leave us for the future? Well, it's going to leave us a very scary nightmare. If this trajectory that we are headed down isn't stopped. I don't know how people can't see that. I don't know why people look at me and now, you know, many years later, people are like, Joel, hey, guess what? You were right. I'm like, no shit, I was right. I saw this coming a long time ago. All you had to do was be a fan of sci-fi and keep your eye on science. And I always was a closet scientist, even though I played an engineer for my career. I was always a closet scientist. Discover Magazine and Scientific American as a kid, those were like, I got those. And it was the one out of England. The one that I've recommended before. Oh, I don't remember. But they put out a publication every week. I would get a magazine every week from the UK. It was all these little science snippets that were just enough to whet your appetite, but not enough to make people lose interest. And it just, these magazines when I was a kid turned me on to things such as nanotechnology in the 80s. They already were talking about nanobots and had close-up electron microscope photos of little miniature gears that just blew me away. So I never let up on paying attention to this tech. And then I told you guys back in the 90s when I was working for a distributor very closely with some of the manufacturers, we had already been told about smart dust way, way, way back then, the days of HP. And now they have their central nervous system of Earth. I think they're calling it the CNE, central nervous, CNSE, probably. Central nervous system of Earth, the next edition of smart dust. And we've read also about DARPA working with Berkeley to create a neural dust, which would be a Fitbit for the nervous system. Now, as we pay attention to what is going on with the 21st Century Cures Act and the neurological surveillance and how we can diagnose disease using your voice from your smartphone, we could diagnose mental disease on a spectrum and then just give you a few zippity zaps or maybe a few splice and dices. We'll be able to fix it, Johnny. I just step right up. You got eczema. We might be able to splice and dice you, genetic defect, and fix you. If you got insulin deficiencies, some sort of diabetes, we can splice and dice your pancreas and fix that too now. Honestly, guys. And not only can we fix it, splicing and dicing your genes, but we also have a smartphone app where we can inject some genetically modified DNA into your Isles of Langerhans. I don't know if that's where they actually put it or if they put it into someplace else. But there was a story about them being able to dial up and dial down insulin using a wireless smartphone interface. So, guys, this stuff is happening so fast. They opened the doors when they passed the 21st Century Cures Act in December of 2016. The FDA has literally gotten right out of the way and got a bigger, newer rubber stamp with a big smiley face on it. Just like they did back in the days when they approved cloned meat on the market, even though nobody had it yet. Well, they are approving these technologies fast and furious. And guess what? If you want to step up and be a clinical trial guinea pig, you can go out to clinicaltrials.gov, step right up, and they probably will also charge you to be a part of it, but you will be given a desperate last chance to be able to use these new technologies to save yourself. Now, again, I've said so many times before, if any of us were in that position where it was our last roll of the dice, you don't want to be rolling snake eyes, and you find that there is a clinical trial that's exactly for your issue, would you step right up? And I've said many times before, absolutely not. I would not step right up, but I'm afraid to say it. I've run into a few issues now where someone has come and asked for some help from me. And the first thing that I did was say, hey, maybe we should look at some of this mad science gone mad, because it might be somebody out there who can help. And you know that there is. And you know that when you are faced with those last moments where there is no other choice, and this is what they're hoping, you will become the willing guinea pig. Wireless neural dust could monitor your brain. Sand-sized sensor implants give instant feedback from nerve cells. Neural dust wireless implant sensors are currently only 3 millimeters in length, and this new healthcare technology could even be more groundbreaking. Scientists are working to shrink these to micron size, which is about the width of a human hair. These new prototypes made by scientists at UC Berkeley, this would be from funding with DARPA, are each roughly 3 millimeters long, 1 millimeter high, and 4/5 of a millimeter thick. Each neural dust mote, and this is a neural dust mote, remember, this is that monitoring of your nervous system like a Fitbit 24/7 out to a dashboard so they could see what's going on inside of you. These piezoelectric crystals reflect some of the incoming ultrasonic pulses. We read about this. They won't need any type of external power source. Scientists had previously explored using radio waves to power and communicate with the neural dust mote, and we read about those as well. It would take the ambient waves of all of this signaling that is being blasted around us in our environment that we don't see every day, but it's there, and it's in all these different frequencies, right? We talked about a lot of that in those 2 weeks we dove into close-up examination of the radio frequency spectrum. But no, they don't have to do that anymore. Radio waves are good at reaching deep within the body, but ultrasound is. And decades of ultrasonic imaging has revealed that ultrasonic pulses are very good at penetrating soft tissues. This is a breakthrough technology that really changes what is possible in terms of sensing and stimulating nerve activity, especially nerves deep inside of the body, says one of the researchers. Ultimately, they want to shrink neural dust motes down to just 50 microns wide, which is roughly half of the average width of a human hair. And at that size, the body should be able to tolerate them much longer. Scientists are currently developing motes that can also electrically stimulate the body. And if they are successful, and remember, this is part of this Electar X program, zippity-zap in the vagus nerve, to be able to cure all kinds of diseases and manipulate and control the body. We also found out that Google has a project that they are working on with GlaxoSmithKline for what they are calling, quote-unquote, electroceuticals. Same sorts of technology. Since electroceutical therapies may still have many applications in the peripheral nervous system, such as bladder control or appetite suppression, researcher Jose Carmina, a neuroscientist and electrical engineer at the University of California, Berkeley, says that these experiments could be quite helpful in the long run. Scientists want neural dust motes in the brain and the spinal cord. And one challenge that neural dust targeting the central nervous system faces is how ultrasound does not pass through bone. Well, phew, that raises challenges. If you want to create a brain-machine interface, step up, Elon Musk. It's going to be difficult. It's not impossible by any means. Researchers are now working on miniaturizing these neural motes further, discovering more biocompatible materials to package them in so they can last longer in the body and incorporate other sensors as well into them. Eventually, these motes, neural motes, could be used anywhere in the body, not just the nervous system. In the long term, we want to be able to send energy to and communicate with implants all over the body. Come on. They're just going to inject these suckers in with the needleless, high-pressure pneumatic injector like they had on Star Trek, and they are working on those also. To record data from a variety of organs in many different ways, maybe even reporting on the conditions of tumors or cancer therapies. So there you go, people. It is really happening. These neural dust motes are being worked on by UC Berkeley. And remember, that's where Manit Napolitano is the president of the university system, and DARPA University of California has a very long history working with the military industrial complex on a lot of different projects throughout history, going back to and probably even before the Manhattan Project. So I run across another story. We've been focusing on the brains. Maybe we'll go there for a little bit. A story that came out April 28, 2017 out of statnews.com. These guys actually have some really good military tech type stories. If you're looking for a new publication, I've read these guys a few times. These are the ones that did the exclusive expose on a good majority of Congress who just passed the 21st Century Cures Act in December of 2016, being hugely invested in biotechnology stocks. So that was quite a bombshell there. The story, April 28, 2017, so a week or so ago. Can zapping your neck help you quickly learn a foreign language? Well, hey, guess what? That's where that vagus nerve runs. And remember, DARPA was trying to do the zippity zaps to teach people who didn't know how to fly a plane to become pilots, hoping that it would make them learn faster. I don't know, they had minimal success on that experiment last year or the year before. But it looks like they might be up to it again. Someday, it may be possible for a soldier to stick a tiny electrode behind their ear in order to learn a foreign language more quickly. That is the goal of the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency's initiative, announced just last week, providing more than $50 million in funding for 8 teams to research how to improve people's ability to learn things by stimulating the what? Oh, that very same peripheral nervous system, which consists of nerves that fan out from the brain and spinal cord. Specifically, many teams are looking at ding-da-da-da-da-ding, the vagus nerve. Yay! That nerve in your neck that connects and winds its way through all your organs down to the gut from the brain. Electrical shocks delivered to the vagus nerve have shown promise in treating depression and epilepsy, and products are already on the market for those purposes. You know, we talked about a couple of those devices that ELF emit that isn't necessarily zapping the vagus nerve, but it is allowing you to entrain your brain waves and to turn up or to turn down your neural activity by just readjusting the frequency. There was a listener out there, if you're out there, Electron, who messaged me about some of this technology, and I guess there's quite a number of other things out there. Another one was called the God Helmet that seemed quite interesting as well, that allowed you to have these higher level experiences. And from what I was reading a while back when we were looking into the RF spectrum and specifically at the brain frequencies, some of those higher level frequencies, and I don't know, don't hold me to this one, but I think it was over like 60 hertz maybe. The brain goes from zero to maybe 30 or 40. Then you get up into the aggression range, which of course the ELF emit doesn't go there, but I can guarantee you that some of the experimentation that DARPA has been doing for their quote unquote super soldier project probably focuses on the aggression range. But then once you get above that, I don't remember what that range is called, but it's like a super high-end range. We start having what I've always called them since I was a kid, bursts, bing, where you just, your brain starts to go into high gear and all these connections start to connect together. And it's a very high-level avenue of thinking, like you're having some sort of eureka moment. But once you get up into those levels, that's what it seemed like, almost like that God helmet was doing, was taking you up into those higher ranges where your brain is on fire, allowing you to really see how things all connect together from here all the way on out to the nether regions of the corners of space. But personal experience from people who may have utilized these devices are that they aren't as freaky as I make them out to be. And honestly, I've never tried any of these. I'd be very afraid to put my gray matter between two electrodes and turn that on, since your gray matter, like I've told my daughter many times, your head is the one thing you need to protect more than any other body parts. Not that other body parts aren't more important, but your brain makes you who you are. And if you have some sort of traumatic brain injury, even a simple one, you know, my great-grandfather, he died very simply, and he was 90-some-odd years old, that old crusty. He used to drink and smoke every day, do all kinds of crazy stuff. And when he was in the hospital, he fell down the stairs. He's walking up the stairs very slowly, and he starts opening the door to the hallway from outside. And I guess my great-grandmother saw the door open, and she went and pushed the door closed, except my grandfather was on the other side, and who knows if that was the truth, but it's a story I was told. And he went falling backwards down the stairs, and he broke his collarbone at like 94, 97, something like that. He ended up in the hospital, and he was quite the monster. My mom's best friend was actually at that same hospital visiting her dad, who was being treated for lung cancer back at the time. And she had seen my great-grandfather sitting outside with his little naked butt sticking out of the back of his gown, smoking cigarettes. Because back in those days, they still let you smoke on hospital property. And the nurses used to get so mad because this old coot would be wandering around the hospital doing things and pinching nurses' butts and pushing down his rail on the side of the bed every time they put it up. But do you know how that man died? Very simply, one night he had taken down the rail on the side of the bed, which the nurses kept putting up, and he rolled over and he fell out of bed and hit himself on the metal side table right in the temple, and poof, that was the end of that. So you need to take care of your brain. And it wasn't even that big of a impact. And impact, I mean, strokes and concussions, they all can cause swelling. And you know, I was even reading a story, and I mentioned some of the research that I had found about a syndrome called PANS. Some researchers call it PANDAS, but it has to do with brain inflammation caused by streptococcal bacteria. Some of it, they were kind of relating to children who had had strep throat infections that maybe weren't properly treated as children. But also, they were even saying sinus infections, which, you know, those of us who had allergies and stuff growing up, who didn't know we had allergies because we didn't really have allergists or anything back then, you know, didn't know it, but it causes behavioral issues in children. They're discovering that some of these mood disorders and that really aren't physical problems or chemical problems. They have to do with actual brain swelling that is occurring from, let's say, allergic rhinitis, that then, because the kids aren't blowing their nose, is causing a sinus infection. And then the sinus infection, you're getting bacteria, and it is causing all these inflammation issues within the blood vessels in the brain that are then pushing on areas of the brain that are causing problems. I mean, it's just so beyond crazy that something so simple. But anyway, I digress. Your brain is you. And if you don't take care of your brain and you do something to your brain that breaks it, well, it's very possible that you may not always be you. So that's why I would be very afraid about putting some sort of electrical stimulation device in my head. But DARPA seems to think it's a great idea. They are dumping tons of research into something they're calling electrocranial stimulation. And that's another one. I mean, these are all kind of the same technologies, but for different things. So this one is for the vagus nerve, promise in treating all kinds of different things. Electrical shocks delivered to the vagus nerve have shown promise in treating depression and epilepsy. And remember, it's all about mental health as well. And products are already on the market for these purposes, but those happen to be implants. And those require surgery to install and remove, but don't worry, that neural dust mote won't. And researchers hope at some point that they can design, ding ding, non-invasive devices to stimulate that vagus nerve that could sit behind the ear or on the neck or even in a set of headphones. Remember, we read about that as well, with the headphones that can stimulate your brain to produce dopamine and make you high as a kite. But right next to your ear is where that nerve comes close to the skin. DARPA's goal, of course, is not to treat illness, but rather to enhance healthy people. Wink. And that is part of that super soldier program. Some research has shown that stimulating the vagus nerve during learning can also have an effect, albeit in a highly controlled laboratory environment. Don't do this at home, kids. But there are lots of open questions. Is it best to zap the nerve before you learn something or while you're learning it, or maybe even afterward? How strong should that pulse be? And how do you make sure that you are not sending damaging electrical signals to other parts of the body connected to that vagus nerve? Like, oh, I don't know, your heart? To find the answers, there are some teams that now have wired up little mousies, rats, or pigs, and others are going straight to humans. Step right up for your clinical trial. Xiaoquan Wang, a biomedical engineering professor at Johns Hopkins University, yes, the place with the biggest children's brain database on the planet, who is part of this DARPA project, is starting human trials in a matter of months. He is trying to see how stimulating the vagus nerve would impact the ability of people to learn new words. Words that sound similar but mean very different things are particularly challenging in learning a new language. Take rock and lock, for example. Wang will teach test subjects a set of words while some will receive a small electrical shock via an earpiece stimulator. Others will be learning the natural way, and Wang will compare the two groups to determine the effect of stimulation. Of course, there are other less high-tech stimulants, says Kevin Otto, an associate professor of biomedical engineering at the University of Florida, who is also part of this DARPA project. You could use coffee, sleep, pharmaceuticals, but those impact your entire body. Well, personally, I like sleep and coffee, but hey, they work pretty well for me. Time tested. Other research is trying to electrically stimulate the brain itself. What, with electrodes? Oh, yes, to improve cognition via what is called transcranial magnetic stimulation. But still, scientists say that approach as well delivers electricity over a very large area. Direct nerve stimulation, on the other hand, could allow them to target changes to a specific part of your brain. And once scientists can figure out how everything is connected, and that's the point. Like, you guys think that they already know what they're doing, and people tend to believe, like I said, positions of authority because they're wearing a white coat, that they seem to know what they're doing. They are the people of authority, but they're not. This is all new technology. And you, me, Nana, and Johnny Soldier, and Johnny joined the army, are all the guinea pigs that are being tested and used to perfect this technology. So someday the rich tech billionaires will be able to use this perfected technology to live forever or to be smarter or whatever, have superhuman powers. It is not just for activating the brain. It is getting the right cells within that area, says Justin Williams, chair of biomedical engineering at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, who is leading one of these teams under the DARPA initiative. Are you getting this? Like, we have universities in Florida and Maryland and Wisconsin that are all working on this together. All the smarty pants scientists that have jumped into the military academic industrial complex. And that is where we think that activating this peripheral nerve might have some benefit. Otto is particularly, and not our Otto in chat, this Otto is particularly excited about embedding tiny electrodes in bundles of nerves to stimulate individual cells, which might be more precise than putting on a patch and hoping for the best. And the vagus nerve connects all of our important organs, like our heart, he noted. Yes, just what we need. It's relatively important that while trying to change the brain, you don't significantly change the heart. Despite DARPA's stated goal of enhancement, researchers receiving money from the agency noted the therapeutic value of the research. Right, so they think they're doing the right thing by helping DARPA discover how to make super soldiers because, hey, it's a double-edged sword. We might be able to use it for some sort of electroceutical research that Big Pharma and Google are working on. We might be able to have a Star Trek medicine in the future. And listen, doesn't this author echo my thoughts? For every beneficial use of this technology, one could imagine a dangerous one. And could devices that speed up learning also slow it down? Well, that's a good question as well. And to address questions like this, DARPA, yes, 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 putting the fox in the hen house is funding an ethics workshop. That is humor. That should happen within the year, according to the program's announcement. Of course, they're going to say they're funding an ethics workshop just to shut up people like me who look at this and go, huh, I see a bit of a problem there, Johnny. Well, don't worry about it, because an RFP just came out from DARPA called Portable Brain Recording Device and Applications. And this is something that we've talked about as part of the 21st Century Cures Act, Section 399S, non-invasive neurological surveillance of neurological diseases. And this is going to include a national neurological conditions surveillance system network. Technology area is biomedical human systems objective. This effort will be to develop. So this is an RFP. This is looking for a request for proposal from companies out there that want some funding from DARPA to create what they've laid out in the RFP. The objective, this effort, will develop a portable, inexpensive, and easy to use electroencephalography, however you say it, EEG for short, device, and corresponding mobile application for use by non-traditional audiences, i.e. the consumer public. This product will provide real-time quantitative assessment of neural activity utilizing display and analysis platforms that people already own. The description is an EEG technology provides recording of electrical brain activity with millisecond scale temporal resolution. These devices are used extensively already in research and medical communities, including triaging for traumatic brain injury. And because of their unparalleled temporal fidelity and non-invasive nature, using electrodes placed on top of the scalp. Most recently, EEG has been used in neuromarketing and to provide neurofeedback with brain-computer interfaces to allow people to move objects or play computer games with their minds. We've talked about all those things. Let's allow Johnny to type without touching a keyboard or kill things playing a video game. Despite all of these advantages and applications of EEG, historically, the devices and analysis software have been way too expensive to promote use by a wide audience. Remember, I always told you it's about price point for it to get out there into the hands of the consumer. Bring it down to $99.95, and it'll be in every stocking for Christmas. Current research-grade EEG devices are also unappealing for the general population, with gel-based electrodes stuck to your head and cumbersome software programs, and unwieldy for military operational use with many recording electrodes and wires. And you've seen those skull caps before with all the wires sticking out of it. the commercial systems that are available and could potentially be used by a wider audience remain rather expensive and are scientifically suspect or not flexible in regards to electrode number emplacement. But don't worry about it, Johnny, because DARPA wants to fund it. The industry has recognized the need for a portable, easy-to-use EEG, and a number of companies have developed simplified systems. Many of these devices, which cost $500 for a headset, are plagued by high artifacts and recordings and do not provide the fidelity of data needed for valid research. So we're talking about a consumer marketplace, smart apps, but they're saying it needs high fidelity to give them good results for research and operational use. These devices are typically comprised of only a handful of sensors with fixed locations on the scalp, and this low number and lack of flexibility in recording locations dramatically limits the ability of these devices to collect quality recordings for research. Typically, these commercially available portable EEG systems are only used for biofeedback and the gaming community. This proposed device by the Department of Defense would be pretty amazing. There's a great need for inexpensive and easy to use neural recording devices. Ding-a-ling, that is the exact same terminology that they used in that Section 399S in the 21st Century Cures Act. Neural recording devices, specifically non-invasive. But this RFP continues, and this is what made me fall off my chair. Having an EEG in every classroom in America, what, would engage students in science and technology in ways not previously possible in the field of neuroscience. Teachers could design lesson plans in biology about the brain and sensory systems, and then use hands-on demonstrations to engage students. Students could record their own brainwave activity and then download that data to their iPad, which I'm going to add is secretly then sent to the neurological surveillance system. Including EEGs and basic military first aid kits would also help both medical diagnostic and clinical care for deployed soldiers. Portable EEGs could also be used in the field. With the data sent to a corresponding application on a smartphone, ding, 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 for near instantaneous analysis. Oh, I think Johnny's a little mentally ill. Got a zippity-zap him, fix him right up. The Department of Defense has an interest in encouraging science, technology, engineering, mathematics, STEM, and developing low-cost, flexible EEG devices with advantages over the state-of-the-art technologies. It would allow many researchers to address basic applied EEG issues in a DoD salient fashion. They want to be able to build algorithms to detect incipient sleep. They want to diagnose or triage preclinical post-traumatic stress disorder. And they want to be able to provide low-cost interfaces for computer training and education, which modulates student feedback based on their brain state. So they're going to do some of that learning crap too. And the proposed device would provide three significant advantages over the new and current technologies. Number one, we wanted to have a reduced price. Here it comes, people. Drum roll, please. To get one in every pot, they want the cost to be around $30. $30 each. That would allow widespread use and adoption by schools and average citizens. Ding. There you go, people. Let's get it into everybody's home. Little EEG, put it on, Johnny. You need to be wearing this While you are thinking about things, it'll send data back to your smartphone, and then we'll take that data. We'll be able to monitor you 24/7. Make sure you're not having any unpure thoughts. I mean, what the hell is this? This is literal RFP, request for proposal, looking for a $30 EEG interface to be able to monitor the brains of school children and average citizens. Number two, another advantage that this would have over current technologies is that it would be an easy-to-use sensor that could be placed in multiple locations on the head to record activity in your various brain regions. And of course, number three, it would give you the ability to download that information directly to a personal tablet or a mobile phone without requiring any type of proprietary dongle or interface. By funding a small business with expertise in developing a portable EEG, DARPA stands to make an unprecedented stride in this technology, focusing on reducing the cost and increasing the operational ease of use for both the EEG recordings and analysis will revolutionize public and military-based access to brain science. And I see a lot of evil scientists rubbing their hands together. With public access to brain recording devices and apps, the field of cognitive neuroscience will be able to take advantage of crowdsourcing. Of course, everybody will be doing it. It'll be peer pressure, Johnny. Quote unquote, voluntary, mandatory to make sure that you don't go off the rails one day and start shooting up a school. I mean, that's what I'm thinking here. They want to be able to identify people who have some sort of mental illness on a spectrum. Remember, that was also part of the 21st Century Cures Act, was to be able to identify and treat mental disorders because, our healthcare system has failed so miserably. What challenges one laboratory of neuroscientists or even a field scientist cannot answer, people everywhere will be able to solve collectively by sharing their data. Phase one, develop an initial concept and design and model the key elements for a low-cost portable EEG system. Phase two, develop, demonstrate, and validate the concept design created in phase one for the low-cost EEG device, approximately selling for $30. Number three, phase three application would be a portable low-cost EEG device and handheld application for analysis, and it would aid all branches, all, count them all, of the U.S. military with particular applicability to the U.S. Army. Soldier medics with access to EEG on the battlefield, of course, would have improved diagnostic capabilities. They have been shown effective as a quick triage method. Many commercial entities would have interest in a low-cost, portable, easy-to-use EEG. Potential marketplace applications exist in neuromarketing, gaming, politics, oh my goodness, and many other fields. In addition, Army medics, civilian doctors could also use this device for triaging traumatic brain injury patients in hospitals. There's a great opportunity for STEM education as well. Placing these devices in every school would provide an invaluable resource to inspire the next generation of mad scientists and engineers in America. An unprecedented opportunity for crowdsourcing the general population. So there you go, guys. But wait, there's more. So don't I find a paper? Because I was like, hey, I wonder if they can actually read emotions with EEG. Well, I hate to tell you, but sure they can. EEG-based emotion recognition. So as we have little Johnny in school thinking he's doing experiments to become a future STEM scientist, putting on his little zippity-zappy EEG wireless headset, they'll also be reading what Johnny is feeling, making the computer more empathetic to users is one of the aspects of effective computing. And we can do it with EEG-based emotion recognition. The computer can actually take a look inside of the user's head to observe their mental states. Whoa, this is a wet dream for neuroscientists the world over, governments and militaries. And they're going to put it in our schools. Like, I couldn't even believe this. And this paper describes a research project conducted to recognize emotion from brain signals monitored with brain inquiry EEG PET devices. Firstly, literature research has been performed to establish a suitable approach and determine optimal placement of a limited number of electrodes for emotional recognition. The second step consisted of putting this information into practice with the brain inquiry apparel, which I'm not sure if that is clothing, but it could be, maybe it even be a hat. Put your hat on, Jenny. Don't worry about it. It won't hurt a bit. During their experimental phase, which was finally analyzed to see what results could be achieved. And let's scroll down because we're almost out of time. Let's scroll down. What did they find out? I don't know. It's really long, and I don't think I can scroll fast enough. They want to read your emotions remotely. And here's something. Actually, we'll go here. Something called bioradio. They already have it. Wireless and mobile EEG systems for healthcare. It's a physiological monitor to provide standardized methods of wireless and mobile EEG physiology signal measurement to be able to use for teaching physio psychology, neurophysiology, and research. It could tell the difference between alpha, beta, theta, delta, and gamma waves. So there you go, people. Looks at those brain waves and tries to figure out what is going on inside. And don't think for a moment that they won't be looking at that data, trying to figure out how they can maybe make some of those little mini brain balls. And some of those brains they are building for artificial intelligence mimic our emotions. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It's Monday, and I'm...